This is Sheila Winstead speaking on behalf of Roseau County Historical Society. I'll continue reading today from an interview with Bessie Bilberg following a 1960 adventure by snowmobile across Alaska with three men. The story comes from Kohler Engines in Action magazine in 1963. She described the food preparation in extreme conditions and read from some diary entries during sub-zero temperature. Here's the continuation of the article. Not until mid-March did the temperature drop sharply, and it was on March 17th that Bessie noted in her diary that the mercury was down to 29 below zero. I never was cold, she insisted afterwards, not with all those layers of clothing I was wearing. From inside out, here's what Bessie wore. Thermal underwear, tights, quilted underwear, downfilled, wool shirt and wool trousers, sweater, bulky outer trousers and parka, both insulated with thick layers of fiberglass. Her parka had a close-fitting hood with a rim of fur circling her face, wolverine fur next to her face, it doesn't frost up when you breathe, she explained, and wolf fur on the outside. My boots were too big, so I stuffed them with extra insoles. I wore three pairs of wool socks and a pair of fin socks, felt boots. My outer boots were the standard canvas and rubber mukluks. Not once on the trip were my feet cold. Arctic mitts with heavy wool liners completed Bessie's travel wardrobe. We had extra clothes with us, she said, and we'd change when we stayed overnight at a village. Fortunately for the travelers, Indian villages in Alaska are concentrated on the rivers, and many have missions or public schools operated by people the Bilbergs had known personally or by reputation. Bessie's diary reveals that the snow traveler party spent only four nights camping out in tents and four nights in abandoned or unoccupied cabins. On the remaining nights, they were guests at villages or in occupied cabins. The isolated cabins were not unmixed blessings. Bessie's diary for March 9th reads, 54 miles from Anvik, Blackburn's cabin. Our nights are becoming more memorable than our days. Spent the night in a trapper's cabin that hadn't been used for 3 years, except by the Martins. There was a lot of dried fish stored there, and the animals, the Martins, had made the cabin filthy. We scraped and swept it all out, threw out all the fish and other filth, and stayed in the cabin. The smell was indescribable, but it was nice to be inside. Bessie amplified her reference to dried fish later. It was fish the trapper had kept on hand for his dog team, but it had rotted, and it smelled too, well, it was almost unbearable. At villages and occupied cabins, the travelers were welcomed with frontier hospitality, and it was at these overnight stops that Bessie and the men could bathe and change to clean clothes. Bessie's diary is filled with comments about the warm welcomes they received. At Anvik, Jack Wharton, the storekeeper, opened the store at night so I could buy a few extras, Bessie wrote. At Holy Cross, the group stayed in a Catholic mission. At Caltag, two teachers, Mr. and Mrs. Clifford Fossman, invited them in for the night. And at Tanana, the Reverend Melvin Jensen gave them shelter in his chapel. Warm sleeping bags kept the travelers comfortable outdoors or in unheated cabins, even on the coldest nights. The real problem was dressing and undressing, Bessie said. All I ever took off at night were the outer layers of clothes. But even that is a chore when you're already in the sleeping bag. I took some pajamas along because it seemed the civilized thing to do, but I never used them. I slept in my heavy underwear instead. Cleanliness, because of the intermittent baths they had at villages, wasn't too great a problem. Melting snow just to wash our hands and faces was too much trouble, Bessie said. On the trail, we used packaged paper towels, the kind that are dampened with alcohol, and stay damp in individual plastic envelopes ready for use. Even with those, we were dirty people when we reached Caltag. That was early in the trip when we had been on the trail for 4 days without a bath. The men didn't shave during the trip. At Fairbanks, after 3 weeks without shaving, they sported beards most men just dream about. The trip offered humorous highlights. One day on the lower Yukon, Rudy was thrown from his snow traveler when it hit a ridge of ice hidden in the snow, Bessie relates. Rudy landed unhurt, but the snow traveler kept going. It was going quite fast and making big circles. Each time it circled back toward us, we had to be careful that it didn't hit us or one of the other machines. Finally, the men caught up with the snow traveler and stopped it. News of the snow traveler trek spread rapidly through Alaska until newspapers, radios, and television stations were carrying daily accounts of the party's progress. Bush pilots and airline pilots kept watch for the tiny caravan and relayed reports to each other. By the time Bessie and her bearded companions reached Fairbanks, Cliff Cernick, managing editor of the Fairbanks News Miner, had run two banner headlines and several front page stories. At 7 p.m. on March 24th, Ross Miller, secretary of the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce, opened the city's new Chamber of Commerce building, and within minutes, acting mayor Jack Wilbur, the other city fathers, and Chamber of Commerce officers were on hand to greet the travelers. There, too, with a special welcome for Bessie, was Miss Anna Lekinoff, who was Miss Alaska when Alaska became the 49th state, who now is the secretary in the Chamber of Commerce. The long trek was over, as Bessie, still in her three sizes too big clothes, sat down to a steak dinner. She beamed at Rudy. "You know, it was fun, but let's not do it again. Not right away." That was an inspiring story, wasn't it? Thanks to Wild 102 for this time to read our county stories.